Most folks are familiar with Dan Pastorini's accomplishments on the football field or in race cars. But what most don't know? Dan's family background in the restaurant business. For 37 years, Dan's parents, Dante and Dorothy, owned and operated Pastorini's Longhorn Restaurant. So the Pastorini family has a long history of making great tasting food from family recipes. Dan and his partners want to bring some of that to you with their Texas-style rub and their garlic and herb seasoning. First introduced back in 2011, Dan's Texas-style rub immediately began winning awards, taking home the first place trophy for best ribs at the Pasadena Livestock Show and Barbecue Cook-Off. They did it again at the 2012 Texas Ranger Wounded Warrior Cook-Off, and the awards just keep on coming. Check out Dan's line of spices online at dpqualityfoods.com. That's dpqualityfoods.com. And take what you put on the grill to a whole new level.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Pittsburgh Sports Talk Radio host and TNT guest Hall of Famer Paul Alexander. You can hear Paul on 93.7 The Fan up in Pittsburgh, as well as hosting the pre- and post-game shows for the Pirates and the Penguins. Paul has covered the Steelers for many years. You guys know that Paul is one of our all-time favorite guests, a guy we always look forward to, and we're honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Paul, Chris, and Bob, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Paul.
Gentlemen, how goes it?
Good to hear you.
It's going well, yeah. It's great to hear your voice. How have you been?
You know, I'm hanging in there. You know, no complaints. We got a lot going on. October's one of those great months. I mean, if you love sports like we do, it's all there. You know, we have the World Series. We have college football. We have the NFL. We have the NHL. We have the NBA. We have everything. What, three or four nights ago, we had a game in every possible sport going on all at the same time.
And Paul, I tell you what, I'm excited to jump right in and get your thoughts on the Steelers, but I'm going to change it up a little bit this time. I want to get your thoughts on the Pirates. As you point out, tomorrow night here in Atlanta, we're going to have World Series Game 3, and it's been, what, 42 years since the Pirates celebrated a World Series championship? And I tell you what, I've been reading articles from the local Pittsburgh sports writers saying that the next best chance that the city of Pittsburgh has to celebrate a championship is actually from the Pirates in about 2027. Is that our next chance to celebrate a Pittsburgh championship?
Well, disappointing as the Steelers and Penguins have been, I'm not sure I'm ready to make that leap just yet.
If the Pirates are going to be competitive in 27, I'll take that.
I mean, we just witnessed a 101 loss season. So you're telling me that in the next, 5 or 6 years, they're going to be to a point where they're, well over 500 and maybe competing for a World Series. That would get my blood, boiling a little bit in a good way. That would be fun stuff, but I'm not giving up on the Penguins just yet. They still have a core that is intriguing. That they've sprinkled some young talent around. So they're off to a good start without any of their stars. So I'm going to give them a little bit of a chance this year to be competitive if they get some better goaltending. It's going to be a while for the Steelers. I mean, this is definitely a transition. They are not equipped, in my opinion, even to probably make the playoffs this year, let alone, be a Super Bowl championship contender. But I sure hope the Penguins could maybe steal one more with Sid before he's done.
Paul, speaking of blood boiling, Major League Baseball is pretty much riddled with great players that are ex-Pirates. And we see Charlie Morton has had great success with the Astros, now with the Braves. Gerrit Cole has done what he's done. Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, and Shane Baz, who the Pirates traded to Tampa Bay in that Chris Archer deal. Those guys have all panned out really well. Yeah, they've
maybe
all panned out really good.
History.
Yeah. So, you know, you sprinkle in the Starling Marte, who had another good year with the A's, Mark Melanson in San Francisco, Joe Musgrove. I mean, I could go on with the players that the Pirates have let go. What are your thoughts? Can the Pirates ever really put it together, or is Nutting just going to keep trading away all the good players?
Well, I mean, that's the whole what if. I mean, the bottom line is, if you don't draft and develop, and if you don't keep, you know, this is the part, it's so disingenuous in so many ways. And there's a new, you know, there's a new regime, and, you know, all the years that I spent in radio, you know, I would watch, you know, struggling stations change formats because that would buy the, you know, the crew there another 6 months to a year because, hey, we have to give this a chance to succeed. So I think part of the whole rationale behind, you know, blown out the whole front office, the manager, the general manager, the president. Well, you know, you got to give this new group an opportunity, right? And they have at least a pedigree in a World Series in Charrington. So, I mean, there's reason to pause and say, okay. But the first move they made was they dealt Starling Marte for two 19-year-old pitchers. And they didn't have the decency to say, well, yeah, we're rebuilding. How long does it take for 19-year-old pitchers, especially in the Pirates organization, to ever make it to the big league? I mean, Jason Bay was their last rookie of the year. I think he was 26. You know, his rookie year. So there's to me, it's a lot to swallow. I mean, it's difficult for me to swallow in a lot of ways, unfortunately. I've been around for a long time. Senior in high school 2 years ago, one of my favorite years of my life in 1979, when we became the city of champions. Billy Stargell and Bradshaw for the Coast, Sports Illustrated Athletes of the Year. It's a special time here. And baseball, they're 13, 14, and 15. And then they were wild card teams here. The Cueto game against the Reds. You know, we had, you know, Brad, you know, in our baseball lives. We had a pulse, we had excitement, we had everything that makes you love baseball was back. We had an MVP in Andrew McCutchen, Garrett Cole, and so we had legitimate star players here. And they're all gone. Like you said, now they're littered about Major League Baseball. Now part of that isn't a Pittsburgh problem, it's a baseball problem. There needs to be a salary cap. There needs to be a ceiling and a basement where you have to spend at least $200 million, or you don't get to have a team. And you exceed $250 million, there has to be some ramifications with that. So baseball needs to be fixed in a pretty big way, because maybe it's because I'm here in Pittsburgh, but I know you're there in Atlanta, Chris, and that's exciting. I miss playoff baseball in a big way, but I haven't watched anything of the World Series yet, and that's me. I'm a baseball guy. I grew up playing it, loving it, rooting it. And, you know, I did see the highlights and really proud of Charlie Morton, one of my favorite guys at the cover. Tremendous guy. And a real competitor to get three more outs after he broke his leg. I mean, that's pretty impressive to me, and I'm pretty proud of him for that. But there's no buzz here at all. None. Baseball's dead here. That's just so sad to me.
Bob, questions for Paul?
Yeah, Paul, it's always a pleasure. And on Bob Veal's 86th birthday, I got one more question about the Pirates. You know, is it a payroll thing, Paul? Is it all come down to payroll? Could they pay more, a lot more, if they wanted to? Or are they just interested in just paying employees, making some money, and getting to the next year?
It sure seems like that. You know, the 98 win team, and they did nothing to prove it. That was their opportunity to kind of seize the moment, kind of propel this into a less than, you know, every 20 years, this is going to be a competitive team kind of thing. And they stood pat. And now they've put themselves in a situation where, I mean, the cover's pretty there. I mean, I don't even know. I couldn't even give you five reasonable starters to compose a rotation for next year. They just haven't really done anything in terms of drafting and developing. Look at Tampa Bay, look at Oakland. There's some other smaller market teams. I look at Milwaukee, which is very comparable. They have spent money. I mean, Tampa Bay does not, but man, their face all skills in terms of drafting and developing and then dealing is pretty special. I mean, their payroll is minuscule compared to the big boys. They still put very competitive teams without fans, without a ballpark that's worth anything. They have great baseball people. And I don't know if we can put the ball on thing. I think some of the decisions when you look at Neil Huntington's last deal is Chris Archer deal. He should never be back in baseball again. He made the worst deal maybe in baseball history. And that's your legacy. I mean, that's just awful. So he had an opportunity when the Pirates had three straight wild card teams to throw more money at talent. He didn't. So, you know, they falsely told the fans, if you show up, you know, that's when we'll start spending money. Well, they went well over 2 million fans those 3 years. It actually started in 12. And they didn't, you know, didn't hold up their end. So, I mean, attendance last year was just abysmal. And there's no pulse. There's no feeling about baseball at all. And that's what I always know when, you know, I take the pulse as a guy that hosts talk radio in this town. There's no angry Pirate fan. Who should be the most concerned because complete apathy right now.
And back to the Steelers, Paul, wanted to get your spin on and where Roethlisberger stands right now. You know, he's pushing 40 years old. He's an old 40 as compared to a young 44 like Brady. He's an old 40, yeah. I would think, because of the beatings he's taken, just the way he plays and his career in general. But, you know, his numbers, Paul, touchdown passes, yardage, everything is on pace for almost career lows at this point. You know, no matter what happens this year, is he going to be done in Pittsburgh at the end of this year? What do you see in his future?
I sure hope this is it. He's so different in Brady and Manning, not only, you know, in just the awareness, but in the style of play. Ben was always at his best when plays broke down. He was one of the greatest improvisational quarterbacks I'd ever seen. And his ability to make plays and keep plays alive, was a thing of beauty. But what he doesn't do is really make progressions, read defenses, study film. Bruce Arians kind of summed it up for me, you know, last year when he said, all right, you've coached, you know, Peyton Manning, you've coached Tom Brady, you've coached Ben Roethlisberger. What do they have in common? And he said, well, Ben's just a football player. He doesn't really like care for the study in part and all the other stuff, which, you know, says it all. So now that he can't move, that he can't keep plays alive, he just dinks and dunks and throws the ball in less than 2 seconds. None of his receivers can get open in that amount of time. On the run pass options, he won't hand the ball off. So that, you know, there's no room for play action. He won't get up under center. So there's no way. I mean, you know, watching the game tonight, you see what Aaron Rodgers brings. I mean, that's the Matt Canada offense. I mean, there could not be a worse attempted marriage than Ben and Matt Canada together. I mean, the jet sweeps and all the things that the Matt Canada offense, you know, kind of hinges on, Ben's not good at. Ben doesn't like. You know, it's just, I don't even know why they're doing this year. It doesn't even make any sense to me. You were hoping maybe he could have been a Peyton Manning, you know, in Denver kind of guy, just manages the games, have a great defense, run the ball. Then you have a chance to be competitive. I mean, if you play defense and run the football, I don't care at what level you're playing football, you have a chance to win. It's like in basketball. If you play defense and rebound, you'll be in every game. If you run the football and play defense at any level of football, you'll be in game. And until Alualu got hurt and then, you know, TJ was out for a couple of games. You know, that first game when they shocked the world and beat Buffalo, you saw that defense constructed at that point was able to really carry the load. They beat the Bills. I mean, that's still, you think about their 3-3 record, you're like, they beat who? Oh, that's right. Week one, they beat the Bills. How did they do that? They had a really swarming, big play, splash play kind of defense rolling for them right there. That's not there anymore. It's just not. And now, you know, Ingram isn't happy with his playing time. He's let it be known he wants to be traded before the deadline. It's just not a great situation right now. And, you know, a lot of people say Ben deserves to go out this way. Well, you know what? They left a message on Troy Polamalu's, you know, cell phone. Hey, Troy, we're going to go a different direction. We're going to go ahead and let you go. Mm-hmm. And here's maybe the greatest human ever to represent the Steelers in their history, not only as a player, but as a person. And that's how he was able to go out. Why does Ben get to go out on his terms? Why does Ben get this kind of treatment that Troy Polamalu and so many others before him that are now in the Hall of Fame? Now, Alan Faneca was traded. I mean, so many of their great players. Franco Harris was a Seahawk for a day before he got to, you know, call it a career. I mean, give me a break on Ben deserves some sort of farewell tour. I don't get any of what's going on with the Steelers right now. I have a great deal of respect for the organization. I obviously, you know, have a great deal of respect for Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert and the Rooney family. I have no idea what they're doing right now. It makes no sense to me on any level.
So, Paul, let's take that a step forward, right? Why would Ben want to come back? I mean, when you look at, you know, the emotional scene we all saw play out with Pouncey at the end of last season, knowing that the offensive line was going to be in a rebuilding mode and kind of in shambles. What was the incentive? Why would Ben want to come back in that kind of environment, knowing that this isn't a Super Bowl roster now? We're rebuilding here. And you're going to come back at 39, going into 40 years old, and all of the, you know, he's like you guys talked about, a kind of a shell of his former self. What do you think the motivation was to come back?
I mean, I don't want to say it's a case of being delusional, but he's a Hall of Fame player that, you know, you think back to the last Super Bowl that they won against Arizona in Tampa. That game-winning drive was legendary. I mean, it was a thing of absolute beauty. And that last pass to Santonio was precision and amazing. And I guess once you're tape, maybe it's like me and my golf game, Chris, where, you know, I'm now 60. I used to hit it a good bit further than I do now. I used to hit it a lot more consistently than I do now. And, you know, I still have. You know, I had maybe 3 or 4 rounds this year where it was like, yeah, you know, it all made sense. It all came together. Maybe he's thinking that, you know, this year was going to be that, you know, that special round of golf where everything came together. He thought maybe he had one more season where, and this is the part that I think that is the most intriguing and just insane to me, is if he would have approached it like Peyton did in Denver as a game manager, get up under center, hand the ball off, let the defense win games, then it would have made sense. It's certainly not about the money. He's made over $250 million in salary alone. So he's certainly set for generational wealth. I really can't answer that question other than he must have felt that, you know, ending it the way they did, you know, they had that little, you know, Cleveland was just sitting on the win, and then, you know, Tomlin inexplicably doesn't go for it on 4th and 1. And I sometimes get so, you know, frustrated with, you know, especially the Ben lovers that are like, deserves this. And he, well, you know what? Practice on Wednesdays, Ben. If you want to learn the new offense, maybe practice on Wednesdays. He doesn't do that. Guys, I am at a total loss for trying to understand. I mean, you draft Najee, you draft Freiermuth, 2 great offensive pieces that I think are going to be great NFL players. they made no attempt really to fix a very porous and poor offensive line. They have an immobile quarterback, and all Mike Tomlin talks about is, you know, how much he loves the way quarterbacks move because he's so tired of seeing one that doesn't. So I don't know, guys. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And I don't know why, unless Matt Canada was given the, you know, hey, listen, Matt, it's going to be a real weird, you know, season for you next year. We're going to go get you a real quarterback that'll run your offense. Maybe he's the kid right here, you know, at the University of Pittsburgh. And, you know, he's clearly having a Cinderella story. I love, you know, what I'm seeing from that kid. And, you know, obviously the Steelers get to see him up close and personal. They practice at the same facility, but Matt Canada and this current, you know, version of Ben Roethlisberger are as dichotomous and mutually exclusive as anything I've ever seen attempted in sports.
Wow. So one more before we let you go, Paul, but along those same lines, doesn't at some point, if the Steelers, you know, if they were to lose to Cleveland and they lose a few more in a row and they're sitting at 3-6 or something along those lines with, you know, a handful of games, you know, left that we know that it's a 17-week season. So, you know, with 5 or 6 games left and it's apparent that this team isn't going to make the playoffs, doesn't Tomlin owe it to the other 52 guys on the active roster to sit Ben down and figure out what do they have in Mason Rudolph? What do they have in Dwayne Haskins? To just see what they might be able to have next season, whether they draft, you know, somebody or not. But don't you owe it to the rest of the guys? Because not everybody's a rookie. Some of these guys have been around the league for a long time. Doesn't he owe it to them to, you know, hey, look, it's not going to work with them. We got to go another direction if we have any hope. One last ditch that maybe we get high or something. Doesn't he owe it to the other guys?
I actually thought, you know, 3 games ago, you know, Ben had the hip, the pec, you know, you name it. You know, that's a nice way to let a guy kind of bow out gracefully. You know, he's injured. We're going to put him on IR. It's been a hell of a run, but we're going to move on. I mean, that would have been perfectly sensible to me, but you know, at 3-3, I mean, I guess they have a puncher's chance to, you know, shock the world and maybe go 10-7 or I don't know, but yeah, Chris, of course they should, or they should actually have, remember the great Eddie Johnston. You know, I know Bob does.
Yeah.
He's a Boston guy, but you know, what he did, you know, so masterfully in 1983, was make sure the Penguins were in a position to draft Mario Lemieux. And, you know, the guys that played tried to win, but he made sure the guys that played weren't able to win. So they were able to draft Mario, which was absolutely phenomenal in terms of Penguin hockey and its future. Why not just find a way to make sure that you're in a pretty good situation to draft relatively high come April? That would make a whole lot of sense as well.
Paul, before we let you go, let our listeners know how they can hear you, what the days and times that you're on, and how they can follow you on social media.
Well, game day, if the Steelers are home, I will do the pregame show. If they're on the road like they are this week, I'll do the postgame show on 93.7 The Fan. You can download the Odyssey app and listen there. I'm on Twitter at PAlexander44. Facebook and Instagram. I have not ventured into TikTok. I don't even know what it is. So, don't look for me there. And, you know, you can write me a letter and I'll give you my address. You know, I'd like to do, you know, the old Peyton Manning thing and start corresponding, via the written note, which I think is a lost art, which I've always enjoyed.
Paul, you're the best, my friend. We can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. We look forward to catching up with you again a little bit later on in the season.
Always great, Paul.
You know, it's my pleasure, guys. You guys are the best. Keep doing what you're doing. You got the best thing going out there. I love it.
Ah, we appreciate you, my friend. Stay safe. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Talk soon.
All right, gentlemen. Take care.
See you, Paul. That's a great Paul Alexander, and a finer person and a better guest you will not find anywhere. Gosh, Bob, I just, every time Paul comes on the show, I'm excited. I can't wait for it.
And he always leaves us with a quote that, you know, it gets me, like, the poor porous Pittsburgh offensive line.
Indeed.
Paul Alexander.
All right, we've got our next guest, Richmond Webb, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Richmond right on the other side of this real quick station break.